Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. 12 after the hour, I'm Jim Blasingame, Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. Thanks for staying with me as I continue to broadcast live from Las Vegas. I'm told, I don't feel this way myself, but I'm told Joan Pride's here. She tells me that I sound a little hoarse today, and I don't know why. It must be the dry air. You know, so dry out here in the desert. But let's get Joan in here and see what she thinks. Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, welcome back to the show.
I don't think it's the dry air. I think it's all the partying out there.
Do I sound hoarse? Do I still sound hoarse?
Just a little bit. Just a little.
Okay. Well, it's when you live east of the Mississippi, you're used to humidity.
Oh, absolutely.
And
yeah,
when you come out, when you
swamp around me.
Well, when you come out to, the east of the Mississippi is so heavily influenced by the Gulf of Mexico that you get all that humidity, all that moisture.
Yeah.
But out here, it's just so dry. It's just you're just in a desert out here in Las Vegas. And so it's you'd think that you'd be better off without the humidity with regard to your voice, but I don't know. Anyway, that's enough exciting stuff about that. Joan, welcome back. It's good to have you back. Let's talk about what Kipling has to say about what's going on in the world these days.
Well, I got a question for you first.
Okay.
What's the weather like out in Las Vegas? Is it real hot? Is it?
It's been pretty
cool?
Nice. Been pretty nice.
Is it cold at night?
No.
Okay.
What's pretty nice? Well, it's been like in the 80s.
Wow.
During the day. Yeah, it's actually been pretty nice weather. No problem. Of course, you know, I've been working at a conference out here, so I haven't been outside a lot.
You don't go outside in Vegas anyway, right?
Well, that's true.
Whether you're working or playing.
Probably the highest incidence of rickets out in the world out here.
And probably the lowest incidence of windows out there,
yeah,
too.
There you go. It's a weird city. I tell you, it's a crazy place. If you've never been to Vegas, ladies and gentlemen, you've never seen anything like this before. I have never been to Vegas. Are you serious?
I am serious. I have never been to Vegas.
Well, you got to come. And you know, I like Las Vegas. I like Las Vegas in smaller doses. We're going to wind up being here five full days. And I guess six nights. No, five full days. We got here early Saturday morning. And I usually like Las Vegas in smaller doses.
People only go in for maybe a few days.
2.5 days.
Yeah.
But
I've heard that many times that, you know, Vegas is great for just a few days.
You got to go, and the people are nice. The people who live in Las Vegas, the folks who work here, everybody's very nice, and the people who live here love it. I mean, they're million. I don't know how big Las Vegas is, but they're, you know, at least a couple of million people here who love being here.
Right.
And then there are lots and lots of people who come here because of conventions. This is convention city.
Oh yeah.
And you know we're at Caesar's Palace.
Right.
And it's interesting to see the casino in Caesar's Palace is much smaller than many of the other casinos.
Well, that kind of surprises me.
Well, it did me too, because I had not been to Caesar's before, and it's because I've decided it's because they have this huge shopping mall and it's a big convention center. So that's how they actually, you know, it's interesting. By the way, you'll be interested to find out that the economy is off out here.
It is?
Yes.
Why?
In fact, well, because
of tourism being down, probably.
Exactly. And
right.
there are two things going on here. This is pretty interesting with regard to the economy, because what a couple of cab drivers, that's where you get all your economic news from cab drivers.
Great.
And I'm serious, folks. If you want to find out what's going on in a community, take a cab and talk to the cab drivers.
They will
talk to you anywhere on the planet Earth, Joan. That's what you can do that. So anyway, so we're talking to cab drivers, and one of the things they pointed out is that casinos have been laying off for the first time since 9/11.
Wow.
So, and I'm going to bring that up. We're going to talk about construction a little bit later on. I want to bring that up on some of the things that are happening a little bit later on. Joan, let's get into the letter. One of the things you guys talk about this week is something that's a very interesting topic and something a lot of Americans don't really understand, and that is the food shortage situation around the world. Talk to us about that.
That's right. And this is not something that's just popped up because of the current economic situation. This is a long-term problem that we're saying is going to create difficulties around the world for some time to come. There is food inflation, but there's also growing demand. And we also say rapid urbanization in a lot of countries. We name particularly China and India. But higher energy prices don't help. And also natural disasters such as the cyclone in Myanmar.
Yeah. Perfect storm, right? That's what you guys call
it. No pun intended, but yes, perfect storm, unfortunately.
Talking about the whole food issue.
Right.
And you know, you use the term rapid urbanization. I mean, when I read your piece here, and as I've contemplated this global food challenge, I'm not going to call it a global food shortage.
Now, why is that?
Well, I mean, I think we just may have a distribution problem at the moment. I guess
okay.
What I'm getting is, why is it just happening right now? Why is it all of a sudden? Why hasn't this been building?
Well, I think it has.
Well, okay, so you're saying
we've just put a name on it now.
We've only just been really reporting it to any great degree, is what you're saying.
Right. That's what I think.
But this urbanization thing is an interesting term to me. That you guys used this week about why the part of the problem. And here's the thing. When people move from the country to the farm, they stop growing their own food.
Right.
And see, that's something, you know, people who live in the country in the United States back during the Depression, for example, they didn't have any money, but they didn't go hungry. Because they had land.
Right.
And they knew how to get something out of the earth.
That's right.
City people don't have that ability.
That's right.
So the more you have people in these third world countries moving to towns and cities where their fathers and their grandfathers grew their own food, these people are not doing that anymore. And I guess my point is, every time somebody moves to the city who used to provide their own food for themselves from the earth, that increases significantly the shortage of food.
That's right.
It's a very interesting thing. I'm glad you used that term this week. Stand by, Joan. Quick break. Right back after these messages with Joan Pride. I'm Jim Blassinger. Stay with us. Baby, just how you feel. We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. And we're visiting with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And we're talking about what Kiplinger has to say about what's going on in the world these days. Specifically, at this moment, we're talking about the food shortages around the world. And Joan, there are two issues here. One is the shortage, and the other is the price of food, right?
Yes. Exactly.
So talk to us about, I mean, let's talk about the issues there. Are some people not able to afford food that's there because it's so high? Is that what's going on? That may be happening to some degree in the United States, Joan.
Well, that's right. And we're saying that, that food prices here are 5% in 2008. You can even see that in the media, people saying that, you know, they're having to make certain choices between, in some cases, you know, food and paying the electric bill or things like that. That's how much food inflation has hurt people, even in this country.
Well, you know, I have, with my tongue only somewhat in my cheek, I've said to people, mm-hmm. whenever I've heard somebody complain about how much milk costs, I've asked them if they ever milked a cow. If they milked a cow, they might not complain about how much milk costs. I have milked cows many times, and
I can just imagine.
As I was growing up, and I can tell you right now that, you know, when you milked a cow, you know, before you go to school, you look forward to milk coming out of a carton, you know. But seriously, there are people, yeah, who are on. We got a couple of things going on. You got high fuel prices,
right?
It's cutting into budgets. You got the milk thing. You got, as you say, overall costs are going up,
right?
And I can't help, Joan. Maybe I'm wrong. You correct me if you think I am. I know you will.
Sure.
I can't help but believe that our policies in the United States, our governmental policies with regard to corn and ethanol. I can't believe that has exacerbated this issue, because today corn is in everything, every processed food that we eat.
Yes. But the ethanol issue, I think, is huge, and I think that's something that people are focusing a lot more on now, this so-called, I guess, diversion of corn for these other uses.
Exactly. Now, another thing, Joan, is do you know what a soil bank is? You know what the soil bank is?
No, I'm a city gal.
Yeah. Well, soil bank is, and that's what they used to call it. I don't know if they still do or not. But they pay farmers not to grow crops.
Oh, that I've heard of. I didn't know. But what is the soil?
They used to call it the soil bank. I don't know if they still do or not. But I remember my dad, when I was on a farm, my dad got money to, they would pay him not to grow certain crops. Now, what they didn't know was he was never going to grow those crops anyway.
Oops.
We had livestock, and so we grew hay. But they paid him not to grow what still is called row crop. Row crops are corn and soybeans, even though soybeans aren't, they grow soybeans in rows to be harvested that way, rather than by hay.
Right.
So row crops, they would pay them not to grow row crops.
Wow.
And they're still doing that, I think. So my point is, we've got all these, the soil bank thing might have to come to an end. If there's that much demand around the world for food,
right,
the United States has the ability to step up and really turn on the food production. We have that ability. And Joan, I'll tell you something else. There are organizations that have been studying fertilizer for decades. International Fertilizer Development Center is one that I know of, IFDC. I know the folks who are there, and they for decades they've been studying how to improve fertilizers, and they've been transferring this knowledge and these fertilizers around the world to increase the productivity in countries like Africa, for example.
Right.
And so what I'm getting at is there's a lot of capability. There's a lot of opportunity to turn on the food production around the world. I'm not sure I understand why. I don't know what it's going to take to really kick that into high gear.
Yeah, I think that point is often missed in some of the media descriptions of this, you know, the hysterical descriptions of this food challenge or shortage or however you want to describe it.
Well, and you guys correctly point out, Joan, what's something I said a minute ago, mm-hmm. and that is there are three issues: the cost of food, the shortage in some places, but then the third thing is part of the problem may be a distribution issue, right?
Right. That's right. Yes. Yes.
Where the food is available. Well, you know, how many times, Joan, have we sent aid? Has the world sent aid to a certain place and find out that the food was rotting because the government couldn't get their act together?
It's happened way too many times, sure. And even disaster aid, we're trying to get disaster aid into Myanmar now, and that's there's all sorts of problems with that.
People are literally dying, starving to death.
Yep.
And the politicians are twiddling their thumbs.
That's right.
Now, that's the kind of thing, folks, that's got to be maddening, Joan, to people who are in the process, whose job it is to get the food to those people. That's got to be something that's just maddening. So we got a lot of issues, folks. And we'll come back, we're going to talk one more thing I want to talk Joan to talk to us about, and that's some of the political, geopolitical issues involved in this food, the food challenges we have around the globe these days. 29 after, stay with us. We'll be right back.
Gonna climb a mountain. Now back to ringside with the voice of small business and the champion of the entrepreneur.
Say it now, gentlemen. Undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
The small business advocate, Jim Blasingame.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for staying with me. I appreciate it very much. You just tuned in. Welcome aboard. We're glad you're here. Joan Bright is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. My websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com and askjim.biz. Check them out. Use them to your advantage. No barriers to entry. If you can get there, we'll let you come in. Hang out with us. Use our stuff. Smallbusinessadvocate.com is where you can find our show and all the different ways you can listen to the show. We have a time machine there. Allow you to go back in time and listen to shows, the interviews we've done over the years. And, of course, the Brain Trust is there. The articles that I've written and my Brain Trust members have written. You can subscribe to my free newsletter. Check out our blog. All that is there at smallbusinessadvocate.com. AskJim.biz is our knowledge base where you get small business answers now. Joan Pride and I are talking about the Kiplinger letter. And, Joan, one last thing on the food issue. Are there riots yet? Have there been some riots over food shortages?
Well, we're saying it's a threat, but we don't talk about existing, you know, riots that have occurred.
I don't think there's been anything widespread, has there? But you report this week that you're concerned about that and the possibility. But also, what happens if we've got countries that have armies that have weapons of mass destruction, that kind of thing? What if this happened in Pakistan, for example, or or somewhere like that?
Right. Yeah, that's a concern. That's a real concern.
So, I want the UN ought to be the leading force behind this, Joan. And
absolutely.
I don't have any confidence that the UN's capable of doing anything to fix this.
Yeah.
I'm really disappointed in the international so-called leadership that we have, not only in the UN, but in the inability for the UN to forge the kind of partnerships that we need. And it'll be interesting to see how the United States has to step up and work on these things, Joan.
It always seems to be us, doesn't it?
Yep, it sure does. Let's move on and talk about the credit markets. Joan, what do you guys say about the credit situation? Are things easing up a little bit?
We say just a little bit. Not a whole lot, but just a little bit. We're saying banks are repairing their balance sheets. They're raising capital this year. And we're saying that the spread between treasuries and other bonds is narrowing. So that's a good sign. But we do say we're not out of the woods yet because banks are still tightening lending standards. So that's going to make credit tight for a while still.
Yeah, banks are still tight. But, you know, I continue to talk to small banks, independent banks.
Right.
And I asked them, how are you doing? Are you still making loans? And every one of them has said to me, yes, absolutely, we're making loans to small businesses.
Well, they're the folks that really know their customers, so I could see them doing that.
Well, and it's not only that, but remember, they're the ones who didn't get stuck with a bunch of these bad mortgages on their balance sheets.
Well, that's right. That's right.
Because they uploaded them, you know, upstream to the securities.
That's a good point.
And so... So, small business owners, if you're having a challenge with, if you're having credit issues, be sure to seek out an independent community bank. I believe in them. And as I've said before, Joan, if it weren't for an independent community bank, I wouldn't be here today.
You and so many, probably many of your listeners.
You are exactly right. But I still say you need to have a bank. You should have a relationship with a larger bank. That's a good plan. It's not a good plan to have that be your only bank.
Right, that's right.
So make sure, Joan, you heard me say this 7, 8, 9 years ago when you and I first started working together.
That long ago?
Yes. My point is, I've been saying what I just said about having more than one bank and having the mix the way I said it. I've been saying that for a long time, long before the credit situation came up this year.
That's true.
Joan, mortgages, before we get into, I guess we need to talk about this. Mortgage woes are taking a toll on commercial real estate. Now, what's up with that?
Well, the problem is that, deals are falling through, and we've had fewer deals in the first quarter. I mean, the drop from $137 billion a year ago to $40 billion is quite a steep drop. We're saying there's a freeze on buying and selling mortgage-backed bonds, and we're saying that this market isn't really going to show better signs of life till next year, into next year.
Well, let me give you another little Las Vegas report, Joan. I've been told that several construction jobs out here, and when we were coming in, the cab driver told us that there were like $20 billion in construction going on out here, but then I later heard several of these projects have stopped.
Oh. Ooh.
Now, the reason, I don't know all the reasons, but one of the reasons why a project would stop would be because the bank making the construction loan got nervous. Bankers are not long-term thinkers, folks.
No.
they don't look way into the future, except to be concerned about their risk. And so I wonder how many bankers have pulled the plug a little bit on some of the construction money.
That's possible.
Even though these buildings are going to be finished way into the future when the economy is going to be back.
Right.
Stand by. Quick break. We'll be right back. That's a little canned heat for you there. Welcome back. I'm Jim Blassingame, and I am on the road today. I'm in Las Vegas, Nevada, Sin City, the city that literally never sleeps, not the other city that never sleeps. And Joan Pryde is our guest. And by the way, Joan, I found out why what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Uh-oh.
Because nobody else cares. Nobody cares what happens in Vegas anywhere else.
Well, I believe that.
I think that's why what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Okay.
Anyway, and folks, I always like telling you about what the offerings that Kiplinger has, because long before I knew Joan, long before I knew anybody at Kiplinger, I was reading their publications. I'm talking, Joan, back in the 70s. I used to read the Kiplinger letters.
Gee, I was just a little kid then.
Exactly. And of course, in the 70s, it was just really, I think they probably only had the Kiplinger letter, plus the magazine, which we'll talk about.
No, they
had
the tax letter, too.
Was the tax letter old? Okay. I didn't know how the tax letter was.
The tax letter's been around for more than 50 years.
Okay, good deal. I didn't know that. Well, all right, so folks, we got the Kiplinger letter, which is the one that Joan and I work off of, and then they have the three biweeklies, the tax letter, the California letter, the agriculture letter, and now they got a new one, the biofuels letter, or alternative fuels.
That's right.
I still think you guys should change that to alternative fuels.
Okay, I'll let them know.
Tell them
I said that.
I think I can make a good case for that.
Okay.
And then the magazine.
Right, Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And all those folks are at a website you need to know about, Kiplinger, KIPLINGER.com.
Right.
And that's a good site, folks. There's a lot of free stuff there.
Right.
But if you want to get more into the details, more into the reporting that they do, beyond what's in the letters, a lot more stuff is in the subscription side, which you can find there on the website. You can also subscribe to their publications with us, which they'll send you by the post office or by email. And so check that out when you get a chance.
And Jonas, Jim, may I give the toll-free number?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Please do that.
That's all right. The toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
And don't forget my commission, Joe.
Never. Never.
Okay. And by the way, folks, they don't pay me a nickel to say this. And more's the pity. Joan, Hillary had a good day yesterday.
She did.
She's having some good days, Joan. She won Indiana.
She got waxed.
She got waxed in North Carolina.
Yes. I mean, she was supposed to take Indiana in a romp, and she took it 51-49, so it wasn't that great
weird.
A day.
What happened?
And it was a very weird election night, because they couldn't call it for her until this one county came in, because it was supposed to be a very pro-Obama county, and they didn't know whether that could narrow the margin to the point where he took the state. So
I think that's Lake County, Joan. I think it was Lake County, which is where Gary...
It was way up in the corner near Chicago.
Joan, it's called Lake County. It's where Gary, Indiana is.
That's right.
And it's where I lived in the 50s.
Should I sing Gary, Indiana now?
No, please don't.
I won't. But what was interesting was they couldn't call that state for her till I think, after midnight. So when she came out to give her victory speech, she couldn't really give a victory speech at the time she gave it. So it was a little awkward.
Right.
But she still gave it.
Yeah. Bless her heart.
Yeah.
She's, I know you feel the same way, John. Don't you, John? You're not a big Hillary fan, are you?
Well, I don't like to talk about who I'm a fan of since I'm a journalist.
I'm
not going to go there.
Okay, all right. I'm trying to draw her out here, folks, but she's not going to take the bait. But anyway, let's talk about what happened yesterday. Hillary won West Virginia.
Yes, overwhelmingly by a 2-1 margin.
Yeah, and so this is giving her new life and legs, isn't it?
That's what she thinks, sure.
And so
it would only really make a difference if superdelegates were suddenly to rush from Obama's side or rush from the uncommitted column over to her.
Right.
Because she still needs two things to happen to win this nomination, to overcome his majority of delegates.
Right.
She, number one, needs a lot of superdelegates to defect over to her.
It's the only way.
And but I think that has to be coupled with seating the Michigan and Florida delegations.
Well, you're right, but those are those two things are not going to happen. But what I'm enjoying, Joan, is the spectacle of the dysfunction of the Democrat Party. and it is. I mean, and they're admitting, and they're even sniping at themselves over this.
It was supposed to be the reverse.
Meaning the Republicans?
Meaning Hillary was supposed to take the nomination in a walk, and then the Republicans were supposed to still be fighting over who the nominee would be at this point, remember?
It was supposed to be over by Super Tuesday. But, Joan, remember this. Do you remember in 1990? Was it 91, I guess, when Clinton was running for president? He wasn't supposed to win that year.
Right, and that's how he became known as the comeback kid, because he did come back.
Right. Well, and
but
I'll
that
tell you
was also. But you remember that was also a year in which people were saying anybody who ran for the Democrats was insane because
right.
they were running against an incumbent Republican president.
And so they offered up Bill Clinton.
Right.
But it's been an interesting thing to watch the dysfunction of the superdelegate situation, which the Republicans don't have, the way the Democrats have really created such a problem with the Florida and the Michigan situation. And I still think that's going to – I still think, Joan, we haven't seen all of the anguish and all of the problems that hath wrought.
I don't think Florida and Michigan would be a problem if everybody was on the same page and stuck to what they all agreed to initially.
Right.
If people
yeah.
had a problem with the way Florida and Michigan were being treated, that's fine, but they should have said something. Hillary could easily have said something way back when, and yet at the time, she agreed to play by those same rules.
They all did, but again, I'm not taking sides on Hillary and Obama.
Right.
I'm just enjoying the spectacle of the dysfunction of the Democrat
right.
Party.
Right.
And they're basically their own worst enemy right now.
Right.
The Republicans could never do as much damage to them as they're doing to themselves.
Right.
Tintel, stay with us. We'll be right back. Back at 7 till the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Joan Pryde is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, we're going to talk about some exciting tax stuff in just a minute, Joan. But before we go there, I want to. One of the things you guys point out this week in the letter is the a probable election legacy, and you talk about a new generation of participants.
Voters under 30. This is actually pretty exciting.
Yeah, but there's another thing here, Joan. 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, I don't remember exactly when, I was in the audience when Hillary spoke in Florida, and the reason she was there in Florida was for two reasons. Number one, the first reason, the main reason she was there was to get women registered to vote.
I remember you were at that speech, and you were pretty impressed, if I remember correctly.
I was almost seduced.
Yeah.
This was a kinder, gentler Hillary, from what we'd seen in the past.
Yeah.
But my main point, Joan, is you got to give Hillary a nod of the a tip of the hat. You got to give her credit for this. She has traveled the lengths and breadths of this country, getting women registered to vote.
That's right.
Because she pointed out that women were underrepresented that there were too many women who were not even registered to vote and who weren't part of the process.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So a lot of these new voters are women.
Yes.
And a lot of them are women under 30. And I'll tell you, regardless of what happens in between now and the convention in August, at the Democrat convention, regardless of what happens between now and November, the country, if you believe that more people should be involved in the process, Hillary gets a lot of the credit for that.
That's right. And that has to, yeah, that can only be good when you have more people participating. That's true.
I agree. And you know, I mean, I have some friends who disagree with me about that. They say that people, you know, you shouldn't coerce people into voting. If they don't want to vote, they probably can't make a good decision. Leave them alone.
Yeah, the founding fathers would probably agree with you.
Yeah, I think some of them would, for sure. Okay, Joan, let's move over and talk about taxes.
Okay, well,
what's the news?
Well, we're going to get those expiring tax breaks extended, but it's going to take probably till very late in the year. And we're talking about, you know, relief from the AMT for the middle class, the research and development credit, and items like that. So we just have to be patient.
So when are they going to happen?
Oh, probably this fall.
So it will happen this year.
It'll happen this year, but very late in the year. So we'll have the usual annual problem of Congress doing things so late in the year that it screws up the tax forms.
Yeah. Now flipping back over just a little bit, Joan, to pull in the election situation into this tax debate. There's a big debate that's going to be between McCain and Obama. Is what to do with the Bush tax cuts.
Right, but keep in mind that all that will be a big debate, but that action will not occur till at least next year, because those tax cuts don't expire till 2010.
But they're going to be telegraphing what they're going to do.
Right, but I just want to make sure the listeners understand the extenders I'm talking about that are going to be taken care of this year are not the Bush tax cuts.
I agree. No, yeah. I agree. And,
okay.
And I just wanted to point out that... while we're talking about taxes, is that folks pay attention to the you know, to this part of the debate and you know, form your opinion based on how you feel. Should we be paying more taxes or not?
Well, it'll be interesting, especially since Mr. McCain used to not like the Bush tax cut.
That is an interesting thing.
He's changed his tune.
Joan, there's one thing going on that I'm very upset about. And Congress is in the process of passing a bill that would make having an HSA, a health savings account, much more complicated and onerous to administer. And this is nothing more than an attempt by the people who want universal health care and who don't want you and me to have, don't want small business owners to have portability and become consumers of health care. They want universal health care. Those guys, those people, Ted Kennedy is one example, are fighting HSAs. They hate HSAs, and they're trying to make it more complicated so they won't flourish.
Well, they want documentation for the expenses that people are paying with HSA withdrawals.
Yeah. Well, that's something that can be done without making this more complicated, Joan. And nobody fool yourself, folks. There are enemies of HSAs in Congress. They're the people who want universal health care, single-payer insurance for Americans. And that's something I'll be talking about in the future. Hey, Joan, thanks for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll see you next time.
Have fun in Vegas.
I'm about to leave. In fact, I'm signing off from Vegas. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. And I will see you on Friday in Orlando.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.